Welcome to episode 138 of the Geocaching Podcast, recorded live on January 19th, 2009. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Montu Ryder.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444, and our Talkcast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with our other listeners, and that can be found at geocachingpodcast.com/live. Click the Join Now to Participate button. Our voicemail line is 206-3503-GPS, and we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. This episode is sponsored by Cache Advance. See cache-advance.com for all your caching needs. Welcome back, Montu. We don't have Daryl tonight. His back is hurting. We are going to be talking a little bit about those for those people who haven't got a GPS for Christmas, have no idea what to do with it. We are actually going to be talking about that tonight. But first, how have you been since, 2 weeks ago when we did a live show?
Yeah, I was about to say, it's been almost two full weeks since we last did the show. Speaking of which, when did you get the time machine?
What, did I say the wrong date?
Yeah, you said 2009.
Wow. It's, as you can see on my
Stop
2010.
Using that old template.
Well, you know, it's not even that. It's right in our notes. To me, it doesn't feel like a 2010 yet, or 2010, or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I eventually, probably about June or July, will get the fact that it's 2010.
Well, since we did the show last, I've been out doing some caching. We've gotten another virtual found in our area. This one is by a well-known local sporting goods authority store, which is absolutely out of this world. The store is actually set back in the woods. You've got places to try out their kayaks. You can areas to set up the tents and everything. And it looks like you're actually camping out in the wilderness.
Nice.
And they've got a cache on the property, as well as there's a park right next door that's got a very good virtual on it. So we found both of those. This last weekend had a cache that popped up late Saturday night. Decided I would try first to find on that one. Only when I got to ground zero at about 11 o'clock at night, got out of the car. Closest parking was about 330 feet away. Got probably within about 10, 20 feet of where the cache had been. And Mother Nature decided she had other plans. She opened up on me and chased me away with a full downpour complete with hail.
Ooh.
I did try searching for the cache for a little bit, but when the hail started getting to the point where it was hurting, I said, I've had enough. I didn't bring my hard hat, so I am out of here. Well, little did I know that if I had just stuck around and actually found the thing, I would have definitely been first to find. Went back Sunday morning, and by that time, two other caches had beaten me to it.
Ooh, that stinks.
But, yeah, no kidding. If I just stuck out the pain and suffering, I could have found this blooming thing. But other than that, it's been a pretty good time. We had, unfortunately, during the week, when I went down after that sporting goods one and the virtual, there was two other caches. Three that I had to DNF. One of them, the cache owner, got back to me on and let me know that, yeah, the cache was truly missing, but it's back now. Come and get it. So I'm going to head down there and get it probably maybe this weekend. But it's almost an hour's drive away, so that one's kind of iffy. But we've been going to the sporting goods store because we were looking for some special stuff. But other than that, not much has been happening. How about you?
Well, for me, Julie was actually out in California this last week taking her sister to school. So for me, I had a lot of extra time with the boys. I took them out caching. We did find one cache. Eli, however, fell asleep on the way over to the cache. So I just kind of left him in the car and parked really close to the cache as I could. And which, I mean, obviously is real close to there's a parking lot cache there. And me and Micah went to look for it and had to dig through the snow and things like that. But it was really fun. Micah liked playing in the snow while we were finding the cache. So, you know, that was a lot of fun. It's weird doing this show this week because we are doing it without Daryl. His back was hurting him. And so last minute, we invited the bad cop to come in and join us too. So welcome, bad cop. This is the first time you've ever actually done this show with us.
It is the first time, and it's quite an honor, even though Daryl isn't here.
Well, I would ask you what you've been doing since last week, but I mean, you're not on the you've never been on the show before. So those of you who have never heard the show, the bad cop is does a regular segment with us. So we thought it would be good to actually bring him here on the show tonight. Garmin has put out a new image stuff that you can get aerial views of data, kind of like you could with the PN series from DeLorme. The annual subscription to it is going to be $29.99, and it will allow the user unlimited downloads for a single Garmin device. You're going to use the Garmin's free Basecamp application for the PC or Mac to quickly load and manage your bird's eye data. So it'll be great for those people who are, you know, planning different caches and things like that. You can kind of see what's around you in the aerial footage. Now, also, geocaching.com did a update on January 12th, and we'll go ahead and link to the release notes in our show notes. With this latest release, though, of geocaching.com, they have modernized the site to allow moving forward with the future projects in an effort to better address the needs of their users. In doing so, though, some 30 third-party applications, such as the Grease Monkey scripts, no longer work because of the changes that are happening to the underlying structure of the site. Some of the changes, just big notable changes that we're going to go ahead and point out real quick. The default cache submission, it now defaults to 1.5 terrain stars. They've also made some fixes to address the mileage update with issues with trackables. They've added ability for users to select earth cache type when submitting a new cache. So you can go ahead and actually submit your earth cache right on the site as opposed to do it through earthcaching.org. The attributes are now included in the GPX files, but you do have the ability to set the version preferences in your profile so you can allow the old or original one that does not include the attributes in the GPX files, and that is the default. So if you want the attributes, you'll need to go ahead and actually set that into your profile. Now, Montu, Geocaching Buddy has been updated. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'd be more than happy to. And actually, I've already used the new earth cache type. That was another thing we were doing this weekend, is started work on our first earth cache. I'll let you know a little bit more about that when we get it closer to release. Now, Geocaching Buddy app for the iPhone and iPod Touch has just released version 4.1. This was released last Thursday in the App Store. The update includes French translation and preloading of images. We have the release screen on our blog, and we'll link to that in the show notes. Bad Cop?
Smittyware has released version 1.3.1 of CacheMate for Android. This includes several enhancements, including support for cache attributes. More information is available at smittyware.com or by visiting the link in the show notes. XPunkX, back to you.
Now, DeLorme has issued a blog post on questions and answers about the PN60 that we had talked about in last week's show. The link that you can go to find that is geocachingpodcast.com/PN60Q&A. So you'll get all of that information there. It has some really cool information, stuff that we didn't even have back in the last show. So go ahead and check that out, geocachingpodcast.com/PN60Q&A.
Geocaching question of the day. Bad Cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is the Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience, and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. I really enjoy asking these questions each day. The stories that you relate to me make all the work so worthwhile. Thank you. Now, on to the question. Are you planning to host an event cache this year? Just over half of you are planning to host an event cache of some sort this year. I say good for you. I'm working on an idea or two myself. Events are such a good way to meet people and swap all those good geocaching stories. You know you have them. So tell me, are you planning to host an event cache this year? Want to find out more? Follow me, the Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Tonight, we are going to be talking about what is geocaching? A lot of people who have got a new GPS for Christmas, they've never had a GPS before, but they don't have any idea what to do with it. They know that they can route from one place to another, but they've got nothing else that they can do besides those games that sometimes come on them to do. So we decided it'd be a great opportunity to kind of talk a little bit about what exactly is geocaching. So we're going to go ahead and say talk about what geocaching is tonight, and then take you through how you will go about actually finding your first cache. Obviously, we're not going to be able to hold your hand with it, but we'll go ahead and give you some ideas. And I know that some of the terminology, you know, us who are old hat at caching don't even think about the terminology. You know, we may say TFTC, FTF, you know, TNL and SL, and you would have no idea what we're talking about. So we're going to go ahead and explain a little bit about the terminology and what you would use to go out and actually find your first cache. So, Montu, what exactly is geocaching?
Well, simply put, geocaching is a high-tech scavenger hunt. The word geocaching refers to geo for geography and to caching, the process of hiding a cache. Now, geocaching definitely has been termed other things, more modern hide-and-seek, the scavenger hunt, many different terms, but it's all referring to really the same thing, which is, it's really a great family activity to get everyone out and about.
It is. It really is, and it's fairly cheap, and it allows you to go ahead and get out and visit new places. I mean, you know, we've heard through lots of people that there's places, even in their own town, that they wouldn't have known about had it not been for geocaching, just simply for the fact of you never go to those places, but with geocaching, you do. So, the Bad Cop, can you tell me a little bit about how you would go about starting the geocache?
Well, starting geocaching is really quite easy. First, you head over to geocaching.com. Click on the hide and seek geocache along the side there. Enter your address. You can enter your zip code. You can search multiple different ways. And you'll get a listing of the caches that are close to you. Look at the names. Find one that you think is interesting and click on that one. You'll see that there are different icons for different types of caches. The green container icon is the traditional cache. It's the one that you're going to want to look for first. It's the easiest for the first-timers.
Now, once you're on the cache listing page, you know, you pick one that you decide you like, you're on the actual geocaching page. And so you'll see different things that you're going to want to note. Now, I also, before we go into this too much further, I want to go ahead and let everyone that's in here know, especially if you've never joined us before, that you can interrupt us at any time. You can give us a call at 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. And once you're on the phone, just go ahead and press *8 or *T, and that'll get you in our queue to talk. You can go ahead and interrupt us anytime if you have any questions about caching, or, you know, if you've never seen this and you want to know more about the things that we're talking about, go ahead and do that, and we'd love to answer your questions. Now, once you're on the cache page, there's some things that you're going to want to note. The cache name is in bold next to the green icon that we were talking before. The icon kind of looks like a Tupperware or an ammo container. The actual name of the cache is in bold next to that icon. The what's called waypoint name, it's going to be in the format called like GC and then some numbers and letters. That's how we reference which cache is what. It's a numerical number. It's easy to look up the caches by that number. No caches are going to be duplicated numbers. Each that number is definitely going to be unique to that specific cache. Now, you'll also want to know that the coordinates are there too. That you're going to want to enter this into your GPS. So you're going to need to know the coordinates. This is the basic, how do you actually find this cache? You're going to put those in your GPS. Another thing you're going to want to note, too, is the difficulty and terrain of the cache. That'll tell you how hard to expect this cache and what kind of land terrain the cache is going to be. There's also a size rating right next to that, so you'll know how big the container is. So you kind of know if you're looking for a tiny pill bottle or a big ammo can. Below is the description of the cache that the cache owner put down. This will sometimes include information that you'll need to find the cache, or maybe even a history of the site that it's located at. below that, there's a nice encrypted hint most of the times in case you need one. And finally, below that, there are logs of the previous finders or people who did not find the cache, and maybe even some other notes. Now, Montu, first thing, once we see this page, what are we going to want to do?
Well, first thing you'll want to do is put the coordinates into your GPS. Now, it's helpful also to print out the cache page and take it with you into the field. Sometimes there'll be something that you might forget. Sometimes the cache owner might actually put some hints about what it is you're looking for in the description. I found a couple of caches where even the name was a hint. And then once I got to the site, it dawned on me as to what was going on. Now, next, you tell your GPS to route you to the waypoint that you just entered. This will definitely help with the driving in most cases. Once you get to the cache site, there are a few things to remember. Your GPS is only so accurate. Sometimes it helps just to put it down and think about where you would hide something when you get close to ground zero. Second, people are tricky in their hiding. They'll hide it different ways. It might be buried under a bunch of sticks. I've got one cache near me that where it's at, it within 1 week, it's under about half a foot of pine needle and palmetto branches. So, you know, note your area so that you can figure out where something might be hiding at. And also look for what's out of place. This can sometimes be a big clue. Now, before you leave your vehicle, definitely mark where you parked. That way, if you are going out into the woods, you'll have an easier time of finding your way back to the car. We definitely want you to be able to find the next one. Be careful of muggles. Now, what a muggle is a non-cacher, somebody who's never heard of the game, of the sport, doesn't have any idea what you're doing. So be careful of them. You know, if you look too suspicious, they might call the cops on you. Or if they spot the container that you just pulled out from underneath that log, they might come spot it and decide to take it away for some reason, whatever that might be. So be careful of your surroundings, who's watching, and what's there. Now, if you find the cache, there are three rules to abide by. If you take something from the cache, there's usually some swag in the larger containers. And what swag is basically just kids' toys usually, although sometimes you'll find something that is even of value to us adults. My kids have managed to find some game cartridges for even their PlayStation and Nintendo stuff. So you never know what can be found there. But usually it's inexpensive stuff like McDonald's Happy Meal toys or stuff you might pick up from the Dollar General, something about like that. But always you want, if you take something, leave something of equal or greater value. That way there's always going to be something in there for the next person. Next thing you'd want to do is write about your find in the cache logbook. Usually there will be a logbook of some sort in the cache, unless it's one of the real small ones, in which case it'll just be enough to sign your caching name. And then, of course, when you get back home, you want to log your experience on geocaching.com. That way the cache owner can see how well you enjoyed his cache, or see if he needs to maybe do some maintenance or whatever on it. You can see geocaching.com and click on resources for more. Go ahead, Andy.
I was just going to say, once you get back home, you should go back onto the cache page, and you can reference that by the GC number, that the waypoint number, the GC, and then whatever the actual the number is, that unique number for the cache, and click submit log and tell everybody online that you found it. So that's the basics of geocaching. Now, back up, there are some other things to consider. Can you tell us about those?
Well, some of the other things to consider are the different types of caches there are. People will hide caches in all sorts of different locations, and there are different types of caches that they hide. A multi-cache, for instance, is one which you go to a coordinate, you find a container or you find a plaque or something, and you get coordinates to go to another location. It could be a one-step, it could be a two-, three-, four-step multi-cache. In fact, X-Punk X, you and Daryl and I went and did a multi-mile, multi cash, virtual cash.
That is true.
And that was a lot of fun. There are mystery caches, which means most of the time you're going to have to solve a puzzle of some sort. There are event caches. An event cache is, it could be as simple as a meet and greet at a local restaurant. It could have games involved, prizes, you know, all sorts of different things are involved in an event cache. If you go to geocaching.com, you can look at the different cache types that are there. Now, the cache may not actually – oh, one of the things you may look for is a virtual cache or an earth cache. There's not actually a logbook to sign. It's going to be going there and looking for a plaque of information about the history of the area, about some geological aspect to the area that makes it unique, and then you report that back to the cache owner.
Now, another thing to keep in mind, too, is if you don't find your first cache, don't get down. There are many well-versed cachers that can't find some of the caches, too. So just go ahead and try another one. I did find my first cache, obviously, because I've found many since then, but it was definitely really hard to find the first time, and I remember the sense of accomplishment that I had once I did actually find it. It was definitely a good thing. And I was like, hey, you know, there's a cache here. And, you know, now that I've seen it, it's an easy cache for me. And it's a fairly easy cache now that I've done more caches. But the first time, it was definitely a hard cache to find. The very last thing, too, is to remember is it is a fun activity. And that's what – it's a family-friendly activity. And most cachers that you actually meet are very friendly. It's great to get involved in events and things like that. Like our upcoming CacherCon event, where you can actually go ahead and meet other cachers around you. Now, if there are anyone in our chat room that has any other questions about caching, you go ahead and give us a call, 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. Make sure you press the *8 or *T on your telephone to go ahead and get in our queue. If you're listening to this as a podcast and you really want to go ahead and ask some more questions, give us a call on our voicemail line, which is 206-3503-GPS, and we'll definitely go ahead and get back to you on that. And also, if you have any other questions about caching, feel free to email me, xpunkx@geocachingpodcast.com, or Montu@geocachingpodcast.com, or DarylW4@geocachingpodcast.com, and we'll go ahead and try to get your answers for you. There are a couple other things, too, that people are saying in the chat room here, there are other things that you can do as far as swag. There's things that are called travelers. Now, what is a traveler, you may ask? It's a swag item that has a dog tag with a picture of a bug or a geocoin that has a tracking number on it also. You may find these in your caches or caches that you go to. What you can do is you can pick up the item. Most of these items have a specific destination or a goal that they want to reach, maybe reach all of the states, 50 states in the United States, or, you know, cross the sea or to a certain other country or things like that. So what you can do with those is make sure you know where they're going. Usually they're supposed to have a printout with them. Not always they do, but you can grab those and log them online with your cache. And then it actually puts it into your inventory, so you're holding on to it. And then once you get to another cache that you want to place it in, you just drop it off when you make your log. And it's cool because you can go ahead and see where these items have been. It's been fun to do with our kids. We've definitely been able to, every time that they've turned one, we send them a travel bug out. And then when they turn two, we go ahead and grab it from wherever it's at. And it's been fun to see where it's traveled throughout the years. Another thing to keep in mind, too, is DNFs, which are also called did not find logs, there's no shame in posting those. Even if it's your first cache, there's no shame in posting the did not find logs. A lot of times people tend not to post those because they don't want to seem like, oh, we couldn't find the cache and everyone else could. So they don't post those logs. There is no shame in that. In fact, a lot of times it helps because the cache may actually be missing. And so the cache owner can go ahead and take a look at that. Montu, the Bad Cop. Anything else that you that we maybe should touch on?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you with the did not find logs, because as I said in the opening banner, one of the caches that I went after, I did a DNF log on it, and the cache owner had gone out, checked on it, and sure enough, it was indeed missing. Other cache owners, like myself even, I've got a couple of caches that are well known for getting DNFs here in this area. The reviewer has gotten to the point where she doesn't even bother me if she sees 10 or even 15 DNFs on the log, because she's found it and she knows how bad it hides itself. And so it's normal for it to come up that way. And, you know, yeah, you might not find it, but that actually is a compliment sometimes to the cache owner, because that tells the cache owner that they've done a real good job of hiding the cache. Other than that, I think we pretty much covered it between the events, the virtuals, the Earth caches, and everything that's out there. Yeah, but as you said, if anybody has any questions, please don't hesitate to contact us through our emails or through the Twitter or whatever. You know, that's what we're doing this podcast for, is to help all of our listeners out, make caching a that much more enjoyable activity for everyone.
What, Bad Cop? Before we close here real quick, and before Bad Cop answers, one of our listeners in the chat room here had mentioned, you know, what equipment should you bring out with you while you're geocaching? Well, the main thing is going to be your GPS and probably some spare batteries. But over and above that, you're going to want to bring a pencil, pen, something to sign the log with, because not always are there going to be things in the cache to actually sign the log with. So you're going to want to bring your own. When you come across really small cache containers that can be, well, really small, like tiny things that you have to cut down the log to fit it in there, you're going to want to bring something maybe like a toothpick to roll it back up with, some tweezers to get it out with, something like that. Now, Bad Cop, what else would you think to bring as far as equipment on a cache hunt?
Well, you know, the longer you geocache, the more things that end up in that bag that you bring along with you.
that is true.
One of the things I like to have is a collapsible hiking pole. That allows you not only to have a little more traction if you're climbing a hill, you know, or some steep grade in a path, but it'll allow you to poke into spots you don't necessarily want to stick your hand to look for that cache. I have one with a metal tip that's really nice for finding ammo cans hidden in bushes. As you tap on that, it just pops right out at you. Water. I hear water being brought up time and time again. Bring water with you. One of the questions I've asked is, have you ever gotten lost while geocaching? And more than half have said yes. And it's always good to have that water with you.
That is true. I would say it all depends on also what kind of a cache trip you're doing. If you're going for one or two finds, or if you're going to go for a big cache run day, the cache run days take several, you know, planning and things like that up over and above a normal just one or two finds. So it depends on what you're actually, your location, your area, and things like that. Because, you know, for me in the Midwest, I'm in the Midwest, I'm in Indiana, United States. And, you know, for me, I don't necessarily need hiking gear, but there is definitely other things that you will need when you come here, like a raincoat and snow boots, depending on what season it is. So it all depends there on what season it is and where you're living at. One of the last closing things that we're going to say here too is, you have a GPS, use it. You may not think when you get out of the car to actually mark where you parked at, but that's one of the most important things, because especially if it's a long hike, to find that, sometimes getting back to your car is another tricky part. So definitely go ahead and mark your car. Thank you all for subscribing to this podcast. If you're not a subscriber to the show, and you can go ahead and go to geocachingpodcast.com and click subscribe, and that'll get you, if you have your favorite feed reader like iTunes or some other feed reader, you'll get our show every time it's published, exactly when it's published. You don't need to keep checking our website. So go ahead and head over there, subscribe to our feeds. If you are subscribed to our old feeds, that were on the talk show page, go ahead and get back over to the geocachingpodcast.com and resubscribe. Join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the talk show service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. And our talkcast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.com. You can call our voicemail line, which is 206-350-3GPS, anytime, day or night, and leave us a voicemail. Have a safe week and happy caching.